Welcome to Human Potential at Work, the show where we explore social impact, inclusion, and empowerment of everyone, including persons with disabilities. Your host is Deborah Roux, CEO of Roux Global Impact, and co-founder and chairwoman of Billion Strong, an identity and empowerment organization designed to bring billions of voices of persons with disabilities together. To join the global community and to donate to the cause, visit billion-strong.org. That's billion-strong.org. And now, on to the episode.
Hello, everyone. My name is Deborah Roux, and I'm the CEO and founder of Roux Global Impact. And we work with global corporations all over the world to meaningfully include people with disabilities to make sure we're focused on getting rid of those built barriers and looking at tech for all. Also, very proud to be the executive chair of Billion Strong, the first global identity organization where we bring together the 1.2 to 1.7 billion people with disabilities with pride. And a lot of you that listen to this regularly know I'm really finding interesting leaders in the marketplace. And I've interviewed this leader before, Andy Garrett. He's with GSK. And I just love what he's doing. I love the passion and how he wants to really be part of the community. I just love what he's doing. And so I wanted Andy to come on and tell us a little bit about who he is and also GSK. Who is GSK and why does GSK care about inclusion? But let me give a quick visual description. I am a mature woman that has gray and purple hair. And today I'm wearing some brownish glasses and a little gold eye glass chain because I never can remember where my glasses are. Yes, I'm that age. And I have on a yellowish top today. Andy, thank you for coming on the program today. I know you've been on before with Kate of My Purple Space, and we definitely want to talk a little bit about Kate, what they're doing. But I really wanted to learn more about Andy and who you were and why you stepped in to help us so much, because we are grateful.
Certainly. Firstly, thank you, Deborah, for inviting me on to talk today. I'm delighted to be sharing a little bit about me as an individual and the work that I do. I've been working in disability inclusion for over 20 years. I'm a white male in his mid to late 50s with light brown hair, and I'm wearing like a turquoise top today. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to sharing a little bit more about what really drives me toward disability inclusion. I'm an individual with lived experience of disability, and in my very early 30s, I was working actually as a police officer in London, in the UK, doing what cops do, a bit like on the television, but more paperwork. And I realized I suddenly couldn't see what I should be able to see in terms of reading number plates and street signs and recognizing faces. There was a problem. And I went through some investigations, and it turned out that I have an inherited retinal condition, which manifested at that time, affecting my central field of vision. So it's called macular dystrophy. So things in the central area of my vision are blurry, a bit like being really short-sighted, but actually glasses, it's not a refraction condition. It's to do with the retina and how it processes the images. So glasses only really help me when I'm 2 inches from my computer screen, reading blown up text and what have you. My peripheral vision works quite well, actually. But in the work that I was doing then in policing, there were no adjustments or accommodations that could allow me to continue safely working in the front line of policing. So I moved into a different area. I worked in training and development at the Police Training Academy. And I really began to see the progress that was being made by other employee resource groups around diversity, equity, and inclusion. The faith associations, the race and ethnicity and gender, they're all quite established in that market and in that world. But actually, because the police at that time in the UK had an exemption from the protective legislation around equality, a bit like the military, I did my research and I found that the government was going to change the legislation. And clearly the police force needed to modernize and to think differently about how to retain and retrain valuable skills. I wasn't ready to take a medical pension and to shuffle off to do something else. And I ended up staying in that organization. I saw out my service of 30 years. I set up a disability employee resource group in London, and I was instrumental in helping set those up nationally in UK policing. And it was through that work, engaging externally, I connected with the fabulous Kate Nash, and I could see the value that was there to how do we support employee resource group leaders to be their best selves, to engage well with their organizations. We did some research at that time and published. I was on the editorial board for a publication called Secrets of Big News. It's all about how do employees with disabilities and health conditions share their information with their employer. I went through that real difficulty when I found out I had this unusual eye condition. I went through the fear factor. I wasn't sure what the response of my employer was going to be. So it was through that external networking. So moving on to where I am now, I left the police in 2015. I was consulting in the disability arena. And through Kate Nash, she introduced me to GSK. So GlaxoSmithKline, they're a global pharmaceutical organization headquartered in the UK, but operating in 92 countries, heavy presence in the UK and the US, and obviously in APAC markets and across Europe. The brief for me, they asked me to come in and share some of my experience about how to help the organization look at that journey for an individual around requesting an adjustment or an accommodation. So I did the classic consulting thing. I looked at the culture, I looked at the processes, and I benchmarked and I found some models that were out there. And honestly, the first question, I went back to the strategic board, what we call our Global Disability Council, led by one of our global leadership team members, so the very senior body that drives this work around disability, what we call disability confidence at GSK. And I asked them a pretty blunt question: why do you want to do it? And what I was really pleased to hear is that rather than taking a compliance approach, like so many companies look at protective legislation and they think, what do we have to do? And that causes a lot of issues around, are you doing the bare minimum? And for people with disabilities and health conditions, who qualifies? And of course, the processes that you then have to follow to identify what is it that you need and how do you procure that and find that through complex purchasing and supply chains in the organization? So that was my brief. I said, really happy to work with you at GSK. What I really loved was the culture, fantastic place to work where they really value difference and they want people to have the confidence to put their hand up and say, I need something, I need some help, I need something different. And what was lacking largely was a process to follow. It was a bit over-medicalized. And so that's something we've taken that brave step. We've fully demedicalized our process. It's actually quite expensive. Why do you want to sit someone in front of a doctor to agree that you need a particular bit of assistive software or a specialist ergonomic solution or whatever the solution is that you need, over medicalized? And actually that's an expensive process and it gets in the way. That is my job now. I'm the workplace adjustments and accessibility director at GSK. It's a full-time role. So my day job is disability inclusion. I wear some other hats too with my experience of leading employee resource groups. I've stepped up and I now co-lead our global employee resource group, our Disability Confidence Network, with the fantastic Tracy Mitchelson, who founded the DCNERG at GSK. And we work together so well. We both are in full-time jobs that are focusing on disability inclusion. We sit on our Global Disability Council. So we sit up there with the senior leaders. We help to set the strategy. We help to do the evidence gathering to look at our benchmarking in terms of what progress we're making. We've got a seat at the table and we're in a very friendly way, a critical friend to the business, agitating for change and ensuring that GSK, which is a global, essentially pharmaceutical and healthcare company, the goal for us is at GSK, we want to do the right thing. And my process around workplace adjustments and accommodations is around just that, making it easier, giving people the confidence at GSK, be they a new hire, a candidate coming into employment, or an established employee that develops a new health condition or disability, that they'll have the confidence to raise a request. It's confidential. It comes through my service line. They don't have to ask their manager's permission. We took that brave step that if you need spend and budget for the thing that you need, notwithstanding that some adjustments and accommodations are actually quite cost neutral, if it's just a bit of flexibility around the way that you work. But yeah, sometimes you do need budget to buy that bit of software or ergonomic solution or whatever it is that you need. We fund that centrally. We do the approval centrally. You don't have to go through your managers. And fundamentally, you don't have to qualify under some definition as having a disability. It's for us, it's about, I say again, doing the right thing, equipping people to thrive and to be their best selves at work, recognizing that in a global multinational, like many companies, you'll have a catalog for furniture and a catalog for software, and there are established processes for the things that you need to go and get. But they all offer a limited range. And of course, those of us with health conditions and disabilities quite often will need something different, something that's not in those standard catalogs. And that's where we come in. We can help to identify what that thing is for you with our partners. And then we go and find it for you. We do it for you. You can focus on your day job. You don't have to have that tricky conversation with your manager if you don't want to. So yeah, that's a bit of a summary around the workplace adjustments and accommodations service line. We're live in 6 of our major markets. We're building out the specialist supply chain to bring that to other markets over time. Go on.
Yeah, it's interesting, Andy, that you just mentioned that you're starting it in 6 markets, because often when we're talking about this, the brands are so scared. And of course, there's reasons why they're scared, but they're so scared, they don't know what to do. And actually, what you should do is what you do every other time you do something in business is you start the plan, you work the plan, you make progress on your plan, you keep updating your plan. We don't expect you to be accessible day one.
That's right. We started the process and we established proof of concept and an end-to-end process, a proper service line. So you can see where it's the beginning, the middle, and the end. And you can look at your service level agreements at different stages, working with different stakeholders. It's a complex thing sometimes.
It is.
Working with an individual to find out what the right solution for their circumstances are, and then going and procuring that specialist solution for them. Right. Again, we want to make it easier and do that for them.
I agree. And also, we want people to be, quite frankly, we need people to be as productive as possible. Okay. I'm a business owner.
I'm really pleased you used that word, because again, when we were talking at the Global Council, when I was proposing this very different model, quite a brave model. No one else had done it like that before, to my knowledge. Not a compliance-driven model. It was, for us, it was very much around productivity. How do we equip people to be successful in the roles they do for us? How do we equip them to thrive and ultimately to bring their authentic selves to work? And if they need something different, then that's okay. That's actually quite routine. And fundamentally, actually, it's less about disability. Of course, that's a key driver. It's about what do you need to be successful? So you don't need to check a box to qualify. We focus on what do you need and let's get it for you. And we're actually less concerned, in fact, not concerned at all. Why do you need it? We don't want people to feel they have to justify that they need X or Y. Let's find out what they need and we get it for them.
Andy, I know that. Also, you mentioned you're in 92 countries, GSK.
Yeah.
But you certainly have a huge presence in the UK and a huge presence in the United States. We all know the GSK over here. But what is interesting, yeah, you can see a trick question coming here. No, but what's interesting is your title is Adjustments and Accommodations. A lot of people don't realize that adjustments are terms that we're using in the UK and sometimes the EU. We use accommodations. We're really talking about the same things here. But one thing that was interesting, somebody that you both and I work with, a Microlink. I remember I was talking to Microlink, and they're one of your many vendors. And they had come.
They're our main service partner for our service line around adjustments, accommodations. They help us with those process steps to they will do a first contact call with our employee, and they will talk about what they need and what their barriers they're experiencing. And they can arrange a non-medical, what we call an adjustments, accommodation, a needs assessment. And that looks at what are you experiencing. And from that, they can then recommend that you need X, Y, and Z. Sorry, Z.
Right. Great. You know, I love when y'all say, sorry, I do love when y'all say Z, though. It's
so cute. Trying to cross the pond with the language there. Z and Z.
And then I realized we are the ones that did it wrong. But that's
so they're a great people to work with, Microlink, and their third-party supply chain. But thinking of, the 6 markets we're in currently are reaching just over 50% of our global headcount.
Okay, good.
UK and Ireland, the US and Canada, Belgium and Poland, and we've got some more European expansion next year. And I've got a pilot running in India. I'm really keen to push this service line out into APAC markets as well.
One thing that I thought was very interesting, and I want you to talk about this too, because the way that we do things, surprisingly, okay, the way countries do things, they do things differently. So once again, the big presence in the UK, they've got it nailed down. They have a wonderful vendor that is a global vendor, MicroLink. And I remember when you started, you were talking to MicroLink, and we work with them too, partner with them. They'd come to us about the States. Oh, you're going to do it in the States. And I'm like, okay, but there's one big difference that they got to remember. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, in the States, we don't identify. And you can't ask. And so good luck guessing with it. And I said, so unfortunately, what you did in the UK, which is amazing, sadly, you can't really do the same thing in the US because we don't identify. And the reason why I bring that up is because I say that to any other corporate that is out here trying to figure this out because, oh, they nailed it in the UK. Woo, they got great process. They got good strategy. They can check what they're doing. And then they go into the market they're also in, the US. And I just want to say that's one thing that makes it so difficult. And I want certainly, Andy, you to talk about it, but that's also why it is good to have partners like the MicroLinks and stuff that can back up the big brands. But you also, with those, have to really do your homework because, yeah, not everybody understands the complexity of these nuances. Over to you.
So when we pushed into the US and North America markets, we recognized that self-identification on that disability area is actually not, it's actually quite difficult. It comes back to that Secrets and Big News work we did, you know, 10 years ago with Kate. It's difficult for people to have the confidence to self-identify their disability information. That's not an HR process. And actually what we've done is decoupled. It's our adjustments accommodations process is not related in any way to self-identification. If people want to self-identify and share their information with the employer, and there's a process for that, that's fine. I was confident enough to share my disability information with GSK. And if individuals want to do, that's fine. Remembering that the company can only use that data just for monitoring purposes. How many people do we employ with various different protected characteristics? So we decoupled that and said, if people are going to have the confidence to put their hand up to ask for an adjustment or accommodation, it's not related to them self-declaring or self-identifying on the HR system, because what we recognize is that people often need an adjustment or an accommodation long before the word disability comes into their mind. They might have, as we've deliberately set our process around anyone with an injury, a health condition, or a disability. You might have a diagnosis of cancer, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, diabetes, epilepsy. There's a raft of conditions which, under many protective legislations, would qualify as being a disability, but the individual, for many reasons, might not choose to self-identify under that bracket, but they still might need an adjustment or accommodation to be successful in their work. So for us, we've completely decoupled that. And then, so in all of our markets, including the US, if you want to make a request for that support to get an adjustment accommodation, you can do, and it's unrelated to how you've shared or not your information on the HR system. And that helps, I think, for us, giving people more confidence that if they go into one process, that automatically they're entirely separate.
Yeah. And another thing that I want to just discuss a little bit is how complicated this is, what you're doing. I speak to corporations, corporate leaders all the time, and I sometimes hear, especially here in the States, that one thing that really it discourages corporate leaders in our field is that they don't have a lot of consultants that they can go to that understand all the moving parts. And yeah, just throw this accessibility overlay on it. You're done. Yeah, there's just so many moving parts. And then you start adding the intersectionalities into the conversations and the different cultures and the different ways we identify and the social models and medical models. It seems extremely complicated for a large global brand. Yes. How are y'all getting your hands around that, Andy?
What we're working on now, for example, so we've established that this is the right model. It works. People don't ask for things that they don't know, that they don't need. It works. People are happy that we've helped them to find the right outcome for their circumstances. The end user satisfaction metrics are all trending well. We're doing the right thing in the right way. And that's working for the end user, for the individual with a health condition or disability. And managers are telling us as well that, you know, they struggle with the areas and they're delighted that they've got a subject matter expert, a COE, Centre of Excellence, a service line that they can go to for that help so that we help them to do the right thing. And that's worked as we've extended to markets. The only thing that has slowed us down in extending to all of our markets is actually the supply chain. We've got the right culture. We've got a process. What we lack in those other markets is the specialist supply chain of the, let's call it the non-standard things, the widgets that people need. We can supply people in Europe and North America and UK through Microlink and their third parties, but they're just not established. So that's why I'm running a pilot in India. I was at a roundtable event with a global banking organization, HSBC, day before yesterday. And I want to partner with other large corporate organizations to bring this kind of service line, which is similar to our model, to somewhere like India. We're going to start with that. And if we can establish the right supply chain that supports the India market, that will be a platform for us to extend into other APAC markets, Philippines and Malaysia and Middle East markets as well. But that's actually about finding the, we can take you through a process to identify that you need product A, B and C for your circumstances. What we lack is the supply chain in those markets to go and procure it, buy it, deliver and install it. It's not a question of just putting something in a box and shipping it. For us, one of the important aspects of what we offer is the last mile. So we don't just order something from a website and ship it to your workplace or to your home, because we really are very good at supporting people in their home setting as well as on site. For us, it's important that we deliver and install and provide the training as well, because we don't want people to be buying ergonomic solutions and having to screw them together. They should be set up for you in working conditions. So we're heavily investing and networking with other companies to build the supply chain so that when we do roll it out to other markets, it's sustainable, yeah, and it works as it does for our current markets.
And I think it's really important for large brands to partner together. So I like hearing that GSK is partnering with HSBC, because I think, and I know you're all part of a lot, there's a lot of efforts being made with the Valuable 500, but just as a citizen of the world, I like to hear when brands are coming together to support each other, to support our community. So I appreciate organizations.
Well, ultimately, you know, this isn't a compete space. We all want to do the right things. Yes, we might be competing for talent. Yeah, but in the disability and the adjustments accommodation space, the reason that we want to collaborate is so that we all do the right thing, so that we can all tap into that market of disability talent that is out there. We know there's an employment gap between, certainly in some markets where it's more difficult for people with disabilities, health conditions to get into work. What we want to make sure is that we can tap that talent, and we want to bring that diversity into our organization, because it helps us to create our products, to bring that diversity of thinking, to create our medicines and products, but also to reach our customers, our communities. The users of our medicines and pharmaceuticals will be people with health conditions and disabilities. So vitally important for organizations, not just to support people through the employee life cycle, but by investing in disability inclusion, that helps them to reach the disability market, the 1.1 to 1.7 billion people in the world with disabilities who have some buying power. Yeah. And companies need to be able to serve their needs.
Yeah, I agree. And I know that you very graciously agreed to be a global advisor for Billion Strong, which we certainly appreciate, because once again, we got to do this together. We've got to come out and identify with pride. Because I will say, Andy, just looking at you, because even though I have problems with my eyes, I can see you. You don't look like you're blind. You don't look like you have a vision loss problem. And we've talked about that on air. We've talked about Lilly Pharmaceutical. He was told, I love Darren. Darren was, one of his coworkers said he'd rather be dead than be blind. How do you even respond to that kind of comment from a
coworker? So difficult.
It's what? So anyway, but it's so important that organizations like GSK do be very deliberate about hiring people that are talented, that are part of our community. Yep. And they really understand these moving parts. But I don't always see that happening, Andy. And so I just wonder if you have any advice for other large, gigantic corporations that are trying to get their hands around it. Because GSK, y'all have done a good job. I'm not the only one that consider y'all a best practice in the field. And I know you got more to do because we all have more to do.
There's always more to do.
More to do. But what is your advice for these big corporations that are saying, okay, yeah, we agreed to something, but what do we do now?
I think listening to some of the stuff that I've been sharing in terms of our model, stop making it so much about disability in the sense of visible people, the obvious stereotypes, people with disabilities, wheelchair users and service animal users, and a person with a sight condition is completely blind. Every condition has a spectrum. The impact on me when I developed this, I had to stop driving. It's actually impacted me more many ways in my private life than it has with work, because I've been able to get the accessibility tools that I need, the software to blow up what I need to see and read on my computer. I've got a giant screen and a high contrast Zoom text keyboard. I've managed to get the things that I need for accessibility in my day-to-day work. So other companies, when they want to hire disability talent, think about the breadth of health conditions and disabilities that impact people in their daily lives, not just the visible and the obvious disabilities that most people think of. I think you've got to broaden your thinking that I think 83% or thereabouts of people who need an adjustment or accommodation because of a health condition or disability have, like me, developed that condition during their working life between the ages of 16 and 65. I went into employment not needing any adjustments or accommodations and frankly didn't know much about disability because it didn't impact me. But of course, when it did, what you focus on expands, and I learned so much more about the breadth of different types of disabilities and health conditions. The fact that some people have fluctuating conditions where they have good days and bad days, certainly hiring managers and senior leaders need to understand that disability is not constant. It's not obvious. Actually, what you want to do is to be offering the best hiring practice to attract the most diverse talent. But fundamentally, make sure that your processes are flexible enough. And if someone asks for a bit of flex or something different, that's probably because they need it. And that's been my experience. So people don't ask for stuff they don't need. You know, rather than saying we don't do it that way, find a way to make that process, that selection process, that interview or that piece of business you're doing, to make it accessible, to be more accessible than it currently is. Give people the confidence to say, that doesn't quite work for me. Could we do it this way? And actually, mostly that's okay. It's okay to need something different and to work. If you have a learning difference, I don't know, dyslexia or dyspraxia, you might process information in a slightly different way. That's okay too.
So it's weird. It almost sounds like you just are focusing on people like they're human beings that have, sometimes they're more stressed than other times. Sometimes we see better. And it's amazing what stress does to us as well.
Entirely. And that's where the mental health conditions, they are health conditions like anything else. And I know a lot of companies are beginning to recognize and understand more that, particularly with the pandemic experience, the mental health impacts most of us at some point in our lives.
Yeah.
It is a health condition. And like any health condition, it can be quite disabling.
Yes.
And you may need some support to get through that difficult time.
And it can definitely impact your productivity. I know with the walk I just took with the loss of my husband, I'm just getting to the point where I'm starting to be productive again. And sometimes I'm not. So I think that it's just so important the way GSK is looking at this, because you're actually just treating people like people, and that people live their lives as they work for GSK. And sometimes their lives change
Yeah.
My life has changed dramatically. My daughters, my sons. It's just part of life.
And that's one, the thing. Disability is actually normal. It's not normal, something special or difficult or awkward. And it can make life difficult. There's no question. Right. For some individuals, it will make their lives and their working life difficult. So that's a normal part of the human experience. And companies need to flex to support people through those difficult times.
And you know what? We need to quote him on that, because that is brilliant. It is just true. We need to flex. And so when we find companies like GSK that are smart enough to hire leaders like Andy, we need to support those groups. And we need to be asking ourselves, if we have a, are we getting behind the brands that are getting behind us? And that's why I wanted Andy to come on today. So I appreciate what he's doing. I want to continue to support him and his team. And we all need to get behind him. But Andy, I know that I said I'd keep you on 30 minutes and I went over as usual, but I love these conversations. Would you tell the audience how they can connect with you if they want to learn more? And of course, if they want to learn more about GSK too, I'm sure that can go right to the website.
Absolutely. By all means, go and have a look at gsk.com for information about us as a company, as a global pharmaceutical specialist organization. Yes, of course, I'm on LinkedIn. But in terms of some of the model that I've shared with you around how we approach workplace adjustments, accommodations, we've shared that. So we're members of the ILO, Global Business Disability Network. So our governance model for disability confidence, it's not just what we do around adjustments and accommodations. We have an accessibility premises work stream to make our GSK sites more accessible and inclusive. We have a digital accessibility work stream. We have a HR inclusion, disability inclusion work stream. So the governance body that we drive that change through, what we call our Global Disability Council, we've shared that model with the ILO. So it's on their website. The workplace adjustments model that we've got in the UK, I'm very proud to say at the end of last year in the UK, we won an industry award for having the best fantastic workplace adjustments model. We've shared that with the UK Business Disability Forum. It's on their website as well. So there's information out there about what we're doing. We hope we can continue to help lead the change to try and drive the business community to normalize doing the right thing about supporting people with health conditions and disabilities.
Oh, well said. And it sounds like if you're another big corporation that GSK, they like to collaborate, reach out. And also, if you're a person looking for a job, it sounds like GSK is a really good place to go and work. Definitely a workforce of distinction. So
that's something that I do. So I've been training our recruiters in our major markets. I talk to all of our recruiters so that they understand what is available at GSK. So that when they're reaching out to their candidate pool, they can say, it's okay to need something different. GSK wants to bring in diverse talent. And actually, it's quite easy if you need something different. There's a process there to support you. So that encourages them to reach out to a wider pool and encourages more people to apply to the amazing roles that we have at GSK. And of course, we can make adjustments through that recruitment selection process to give people the best chance of succeeding and coming and working for us. And then when we've made a hiring decision, we again reach out to them and ask them if they want to speak to someone about adjustments accommodations, and my team connects with them before they even start.
Wow. It's just so hopeful. It's so hopeful. So thank you. Thank you, Andy and GSK, for this amazing leadership and sharing what they've done. Business Disability Forum, they've got it in the ILO, GBDN, that this is the way forward. And of course, Kay was supporting by giving Andy's leadership my purple space. So that's the brands we want to get behind, the brands that are really behind us. So thank you to the audience. And maybe Andy will come back on again. We would hope you come back on and get more information, Andy, but we really appreciate your leadership and GSK's leadership and our spaces too. So thank you.
Delighted to join you and to share some of the thinking that we've taken at GSK, some of the steps that have worked for us as an organization. There will be different models. For me, the key takeaways are demedicalize the model where you can. Trust people to ask for what they need, because they tend to ask for what they need, not what they want. Yeah, so trust is an important part of that. And if you can put in a centralized approvals model, that doesn't mean that you have to pay for it. So we fund our adjustments centrally. When the end user's got what they need, we give it to the accountants to cross-charge where the costs land on the balance sheet. Again, it doesn't involve the end user or their manager. That's an accounting practice. We raise the purchase orders, and we by funding it up front, it means that we can get the solution to people quicker and get them to be more productive. Let the admin take over in the background after people have got what they need.
And more productive. Hello?
Entirely.
Yeah. All right. Well, obviously, I could keep Andy on all day, so I'm going to let him go. But
thank you, everyone.
Really appreciate you, Andy. And thanks to the audience.
Yeah, thanks to the audience for listening. And thanks to you, Deb, for leading this kind of information sharing podcast from which we hope that people will learn.
Right. And give hope that things are actually happening.
So. Yeah. Bless you. Thanks ever so much. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Human Potential at Work. To learn more about Ru Global Impact, visit ruglobal.com. And to learn more about Billion Strong, an identity and empowerment organization designed to bring the billions of voices of persons with disabilities together, you can join the global community and donate at billion-strong.org. That's billion-strong.org.